Blog Talk Radio.
I suffered in prison. I'm talking about suffered. I was 16. I sat in a prison cell and I prayed for this day.
You have just touched our common ground. I'm Janice Graham. Tonight at Our Common Ground, we're going to be examining the case of John Burge, a Chicago Police Department lieutenant who led a band of rogue police officers who tortured and beat false confessions from hundreds of black men under arrest in that city for more than 30 years. Our guest, Mark Clements. He is a victim activist who spent 28 years in prison after being tortured into confessing a crime he did not commit at the hands of the Boys of Bourg. I'm Janice Graham. Thank you for being here at Our Common Ground.
And thank you so much for being here. Another edition of Our Common Ground. And Alpha is my co-host tonight. Again, Alpha, welcome, and thank you for being here.
Well, good evening, Janice, and how are you this evening?
Well, you know, Alpha, I'm staid, as they say, and at my age, that has a great deal of import. But thank you for asking. We're going to be having a guest in this first page, Mark Clements, who at the age of 16 was arrested and taken into police custody and repeatedly questioned by detectives in regard to a fire that occurred on the south side of Chicago. And it resulted in the deaths of four people. On June 25th, Clements, who could not read nor write beyond the third grade level, was left in the hands of a torturous cop who worked under the command of John Burge. He was denied a youth officer and denied the right to call his parents. He witnessed a Chicago police detective inside the police station washroom drinking what appeared to be whiskey. And later during the evening of June 25th, Clemens was brought face to face with the very man that he had seen inside the police station washroom. Clemens was beat throughout his body, and his genitals were grabbed and squeezed until he could no longer withstand the pain, and he agreed to repeat a confession that was told to him by a Chicago police detective. It was spoon-fed to him. After two separate beatings and torturing Clemens' genitals, he confessed to a crime that he did not commit. He was sentenced to four counts of natural life as a youth offender. He had been found guilty of the arson fire that killed four people, despite the only evidence against him was a confession that totally made no sense. That confession led almost every court in Illinois to deny his appeals. Not one witness testified against Clements. Clements spent 28 years inside Illinois state prisons. He attended classes and was able to achieve a GED. He became an activist from behind prison bars. A young 15-year-old girl from Indiana killed a Sunday school teacher who was 70-plus years of age. The young girl received the death penalty despite the fact that the law required that she be 18 years old. Clements went on a food strike over a week and wrote media and different organizations requesting that they help this girl. She had been raped on two different occasions while inside the detention center by male guards. She told her lawyers on both occasions what occurred to her, and they addressed the judge. Each time this girl complained, the judge ignored her. The judge went on to sentence the young 15-year-old Paula Cooper to the death penalty, claiming he could not see himself to give a black person who killed a white person any lesser of a sentence than death. He sentenced her to death. From that point, Mark Clements became an activist over 25 years of his life. He felt that he had to fight and battle to get out of prison. And in 1990, he was determined through Office of Professional Standard Report that John Burge beat many African-American men. He was fired in 1993 from the Chicago Police Department because he tortured a suspect. Despite being fired by the department, he remained to receive his pension. Evidence through investigators were able to determine that Berg was responsible for many beatings and tortures that began in 1972 and ended the year he had been fired. In 2006, a special prosecutor's report revealed that over 100 African-American men had been tortured inside Area 2 and 3 violent crime units in the city of Chicago. Berg, Narr, any of the detectives that worked under his command could be charged with the tortures because the statute of limitation expired on the charge of torture. It was determined that much as 64 different detectives worked under the command of Berg and that they openly carried out most of the acts of his tortures. Mark Clemens was freed from Illinois' prisons once it was determined that a motorcycle gang from the state of Michigan committed the crime for which he had been found guilty. Mark Clemens is the administrator over the Campaign to End the Death Penalty, which is a nation-based group that opposed the death penalty. He is the wrongful conviction coordinator at the Chicago Alliance Against Racist and Political Repression. He is also the chairperson of the Jail John Berg Organization, a group in which he started to confront and reform Chicago Police Department as we struggle for the release of all 23 remaining imprisoned victims of Berg. That is what we are going to be talking about tonight, Alpho, at Our Common Ground.
Well, Janice, I read the bio. I cannot say I'm surprised. Being a resident here in the city of Chicago, even then, under then State's Attorney Richard Daley, who simply ignored and dismissed all of the accusations made against John Berg. This wasn't just a rogue element in the police force. This was a culture of racist white supremacy that we see that basically parallels throughout this nation. This is the culmination of events where you put people of that ilk in black judges' robes and police uniforms, and you can continue this new Jim Crow. You can continue this oppression of African-Americans and Hispanics and just the white supremacy aspect of it. Look at the commonality of this type of behavior, not just here in Chicago, but throughout the nation. Here in Chicago, this is commonplace. This was common. This was par for the course. And as you have judges who sit on the bench, and they have this wink, wink, nod, and look the other way mentality when it comes to defendants of color and when it comes to minorities. And, you know, like you said, the torture that produced this confession, despite all other evidence, no other evidence. It's amazing how you get to a place where being pissed isn't good enough. It just doesn't cover it. It just doesn't speak to the level of injustice. You know, our lives as African Americans have been so devalued by this ilk of people. You know, you hear people from other cultures who simply dismiss the premise that the Klan has infiltrated the majority of our society and has risen to a point where one of the reasons that I've never been able to understand why the Klan has never been designated as a terrorist organization is because that means that more than half the judges in this country and policemen in this nation would have to be amongst these terrorist organizations.
Would have to quit their jobs and shut down their businesses and resign from public office. Is that what you're saying, Alpha?
Well, it gets to...
I think it is.
Well, it gets to a point where at some point in time you have to look at these people and go, really? I mean, and they are covered by a consensus of denial.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, we want to welcome all of you to Our Common Ground, and that's what we're going to be dealing with tonight here at Our Common Ground. You know, Alpha, part of what you are alluding to is that it doesn't just seem, there is evidence that for every lesson we learn regarding these outrageous, scandalous, and criminal uncoverings, we still have more. And one of the things that really burns me more than anything about the Byrd case is that after so many years of complaints that were taken to the Justice Department, that were taken to the mayor, that were taken to the governor of Illinois, it took people who had to do, individuals who were victims, and we'll talk with Mark Clements about this, to become activists on the inside in order to raise these issues to a place where someone, the powers that be, were willing to do something about it.
Though this nation has proudly thought of itself as a ethnic melting pot, in things racial, we have always been, and we, I believe, continue to be, in too many ways, essentially a nation of cowards.
You're listening to Our Common Ground, and we're going to get started on our show
this
tonight.
This is Our Common Ground.
I sat in a prison cell, and I prayed for this day.
The former Chicago police commander was convicted of lying about torturing suspects during the 70s and 80s. The incidents happened too long ago for Burge to be charged, but federal prosecutors found that in 2003, Burge answered two sworn court documents that he never tortured suspects or knew about such acts. That allowed prosecutors to bring the obstruction of justice and perjury charges. While the jury only heard about five cases of Burge torturing suspects, dozens of other men also contend Burge abused them. Mark Clements spent nearly 30 years in prison for murders he did not commit. Clements says he was just a teenager when Burge coerced his confession.
Today is a victory for every poor person. I was 16 years old.
Yes.
I suffered in prison. I'm talking about suffered. I was 16. That feels like weights that just fell off.
From a commanding position in the police department of the city of Chicago. For more than 30 years, John Byrd commanded police officers in torture and terrorism against African American men who had been arrested in that city. Tonight, we'll talk to one of their victims, who has turned activist, Mark Clements. Stay with us at Our Common Ground. We'll be right back.
Mark Clemens, welcome my brother to Our Common Ground. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Janice, for allowing me this opportunity to once again express to your listeners and to the people abroad about Chicago police tortures.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mark, I have with me my co-host, Alfo, and he is a resident of Chicago. And before we get started talking about hearing your story and what you are doing and how you turned activist in this, I just want to extend to you my deepest gratitude for your strength and courage for being able to survive and live to tell your story and live to grow in power from this experience. I read I read all of the affidavits. I read parts of the trial, the transcript of the trial. And I can tell you, for every word, you were my 16-year-old son.
Thank you.
And I thank you so much for surviving.
Well,
and I thank you.
You can continue.
No, I just want you to know that there are people out here who understand the struggle that you had to get to the place where you grew in power out of this experience rather than being shattered.
Well, let me tell you, I thank you for your encouragement. And that is true. You know, being 16 years of age and being basically placed into a situation that I didn't even have a clue even existed here in America, because one thing that your listeners may not understand, and that is that when I entered into prison, I had a third grade education.
I did mention that.
Oh, okay. And one thing that I had to learn was to defeat this system and to be able to rise above my situation. I had to go to school, and I had to start all over in embarrassing situations. But I realized that if I had not traveled that road, perhaps I would have died in prison. What is deeply troubling to me is that a police department as a whole, because that is what John Burge's behavior reflected upon, as a whole, many men being beat and being tortured, and many people may not understand that the men were beaten, tortured in their genitals and in their testicle areas. One young man being Marcus Wiggins, only 13 years old. This grew in me to sicken me. I cannot say that I seen myself being released and placed into basically the cameras the way that they have been placed upon me, but I do look at it as the will of God for my life and to be an advocate for the other individuals that are remaining to suffer in prison, and that deeply troubles me. And when you hear my emotions, those emotions are not for Mark Clemens. Those emotions are for a young child that I had to leave behind. And she was only 45 days old. even though being a kid and now faced with the responsibility of raising a kid, I took on that challenge with great responsibility and great honor because I was determined to not do things the way my father had done me. And I was mm-hmm. abandoned as a child. And to go through being placed inside of a prison, I was called a liar. That's what I was called. And it was not by the Caucasian community, as most people may think. I was called a liar by a black judge, William Cousins Jr. And that set in me. Being a child back in 1982 and being locked and condemned to die inside of a prison, I did an interview with a local station, which is ABC Channel 7 News, and it was called Juveniles Behind Bars. And listening to Richard Deli state, oh, he'll never get out of prison, that motivated me beyond anything that I've done because I was determined to make the devil into a lie.
And Mark, let's go back to when you were 16. You were a young father with a 45-day-old baby.
Mm-hmm.
And when you were picked up by police, were you aware of the crime they were investigating?
No. What occurred was my sister got into an altercation with a young lady in this community where this fire occurred. I did not
this
even
was in the south,
say the south side of Chicago.
Chicago, uh-huh.
I didn't even stay in that community. I stayed mm-hmm. in the Rogers Park community, which was far north. But I went to visit my sister, Patricia Clements, and I seen some money on the ground, and I put my feet on that money, and I eased it into my pocket the way we used to do back in those days. And the young lady went berserk. She accused my sister of stealing her money. Well, I tried to calm this young lady down to find out how much money she lost because back in those days, we were asked the people, how much money did you lose? And if you couldn't tell us how much money you lost, then we would take it as that you didn't lose no money. And she was so berserk, I couldn't calm her down. Well, she picked up a brick, and she tried to hit me in the head with that brick. And this 240-pound young lady named Ramona Patton, she began to fight me. Well, I got the best end of the fight, being only 120 pounds at 16 years old. I'm not much big as it is now. And she vowed revenge. There was a reward that was placed out by the building owner for information that could lead to the arrest and conviction of whoever committed this crime. Come to find out, Ramona implicated my name to the Chicago police. Chicago police then tried to make it appear that they arrested me for a disorderly conduct, which was like 10 days after this fire, really 8 days after the fire. The fire occurred on June the 17th. I was arrested on June the 25th. So that's 8 days later. I was taken to Area 3 violent crimes by two African-American police officers, one being Virgil Jones, who later become to be a well-known alderman, and the other one was Aaron Gibson. Soon as I was taken in that police station, a detective came from behind the sergeant desk, and he struck me in my face, and he said, "Is this the little MF?" And I balled up in a fetus position, because that's what we did back then. We would ball up in a fetus position to protect our face area. Well, Virgil Jones and Aaron Gibson begin to holler out, "He's in our custody and it's a juvenile." The officer stopped. Well, they took me to a small interrogation room, chained me there, and left me. What transpired over the next 10 to 13 hours was hell. First of all, they took me out of the police station and they asked me if I knew someone who worked in a gas station in that community. I did not, but I would occasionally go into that gas station where they were trying to claim that a gas station attendant sold me gasoline in a gasoline can at, and I would buy potato chips and pops out of the little vending machine there. Well, they brought him in, and what I witnessed, they beat this man unconscionable before me. I seen the detectives in the police station bathroom, yes, drinking what appeared to be whiskey. Well, approximately 2 hours later, that same detective came back into the interrogation room, and may I add that they would not allow me to have a juvenile officer. They wouldn't allow me to call my parents to let them know where I was. So I was basically held at the mercy of these policemen. Officer John McCann is his name. He walked into this small closet-sized interrogation room where my hands, not a hand, but hands, was handcuffed to a ring that was attached to the wall at Area 3 Violent Crimes. He said that he had come to help me. He asked me why would a young man by the name of James Robinson claim that we set this fire that killed four people. And I told the detective, well, I didn't set no fire. But if James Robinson says that we set this fire, then James must have done it. Well, the detective must have taken that as a smart comment because he came over and he set his seat directly in front of me. This seat had a bar in front of it that would prevent my feet from kicking up. And he began to hit me in my chest and stomach area. He began to call me little nigger boy, that you gonna learn to mind me. And he hit me in the bone areas of my arms, being only 120 pounds, I couldn't withstand that, but I was able to stand it. And he began to hit me across my thighs, and he smacked me a couple of times and punched me. And then each time he was hitting me, it looked like a demon was in his eyes, because every time he would call me a nigger. He called me this so much, I thought really that was my name. Well, he grabbed my genitals and he squeezed them so hard that I really thought that my head was going to pop off my body. I told them that I would cooperate, but when the state's attorney came into the room, and the state's attorney name was Kevin Moore, he was a Caucasian state's attorney. He told me that he worked for the people. Being illiterate, I said, well, okay, if you work for the people, you got to be here to help me. And I told him that the detectives had beat me, and I didn't commit this crime, and I wanted to call my parents, and they didn't allow me to call my parents. He left the interrogation room, packed all of his stuff, left the interrogation room, and I could see him out there talking to these detectives, one being Daniel McQueenie, who is almost notorious as John Burge. And about 10, 15 minutes later, McCann comes back. He slams the door and says, are you trying to get me in trouble with my boss? He locks it, and he says, you want to go tell, huh? And he began to hit me so hard it was knocking the wind out of my body in my chest area. And he said, go tell this. And he would hit me, wow, wham, wham. He pulled his seat back up in front of me. And the same similar beating as what I explained earlier, he began to do all over again. But he was telling me more in an angry voice, little nigger boy, you going to learn to do what we tell you to do. Didn't I tell you to tell them what I told you to tell them? And you didn't. And now you trying to get me in trouble with my boss. And he would hit me in my stomach. He began to smack me across my face.
Now, Mark, let me stop you.
Yes.
All this time, you weren't allowed, you weren't offered a juvenile officer, you weren't offered a call to your parents.
Mm-hmm.
You only had McCain and the state's attorney general's associate. That's it.
Yes.
And how long did this torture, it's both torture and terrorism at the same time, and you were 16 years old. How long did this go on?
Well, it went on for approximately, the beating itself went on, the first one, for about maybe 15 minutes. The second one, at most, 7 minutes. It's what he did at the end that really made it even more so shorter, because when he grabbed my genitals, the certain thing that's called testicles, that was grabbed, and he squeezed it till I started screaming and hollering. I was hollering so loud you could probably hear me in Massachusetts. No one come to my aid. So being the paper boy of Jesse Jackson Senior.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I said, well, if I cooperate to stop this beating here, I can go and I can tell him and he'll help me. Because every Saturday he would preach to me about how much he would help the children. Well, once the confession was all said and done.
Okay, let me stop you again to get some clarification. So Detective McCain brought you a piece of paper and you had to write out this confession?
No. He told me what to say to the state's attorney, and he wrote it out.
Okay.
Yes. So the things that I was told to tell him, it literally made no common sense had it been investigated, because there's no 7100 South Wells in Chicago. And I was told to say that I was in the car with three other young men, and the car ran out of gas. And we got his gas can and went over to the gas station. And then this other young man by the name of Kenneth Minor was owed drug money, and we went to collect it. Well, had I had competent attorneys, it would have been discovered many years ago that what it stated in the confession really didn't make no common sense, because the confession stated that we beat a boy. No boy was ever beat. The confession stated that we stabbed a boy. The coroner clearly in court testified that he found no evidence of a stabbing. Then it stated that we beat the boy. The coroner clearly testified he found no evidence of blunt trauma. It stated that every time this boy would miss jumping up in the air, that we would throw gasoline on him, because they did find gasoline on his clothing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what really ended up occurring, it still bothers me to this day, and will probably the rest of my life. But in a nutshell, had the confession been investigated, then most likely I would have been acquitted years ago.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you, did you have a defense attorney?
Yes, I had.
And where did
two
he come?
Defense attorneys, one with 2 years of experience, one with 3 years of experience from the Cook County Public Defender's Office.
And did at any time during the trial were you called to testify on your behalf?
Yes, I was. Yes. And what I testified to was that I did not commit this crime. I testified to the fact that I was beat. I was told by my trial attorneys, I don't know what type of strategy they was using, not to mention the officer's name. And they said, only mention his name if you see him in court. If you come in and testify, jump up and point to him. Well, the state was not going to call him there. And the reason why, because I had a supervisor in the juvenile detention center where I was being held. He knew I didn't commit this crime. So he helped me to write a letter to Richard Deli. And I wrote Richard
Deli. Who was the state attorney at the time.
Yes, ma'am. And I wrote him, that is probably why John McCann was never called to testify in this case.
And he never appeared in court.
He never appeared in court.
Did your attorney think that was conspiratorial on the part of the state attorney's office?
No. Because they never had handled a case this serious. They were juvenile officers. I mean, juvenile attorneys is what they were.
Let me ask you, in the course of your trial, did the judge ever take the issue of the torture and forced confession under advisement?
Yes, we filed a motion to suppress. He stated, based off of two photos which the state's attorney took of me after this beating, that he did not believe that I was even beat at all. Well, I explained to him what had occurred. They put two huge bright lights in my face, which covered up these little red marks, and it made it look as if it was reflections that were shining in my face. Judge Cousins, he came from the same community where all these beatings and tortures occurred. He knew. He knew.
And I should add that Judge Cousins' father has been, for more than 30 years, at the time of your case, a bishop in the AME Church.
Well, I didn't know that.
I should add that.
I knew that his son had been murdered over on the east side of Chicago under a BIDOC. And this occurred in the late 70s when he decided to run for alternate.
And so I remember, and that was about 4 or 5 years ago. Is that correct?
Oh, that his son
was
the
judge's brother.
I don't know about his brother, but I knew about his son.
Okay, yeah. It was his son. Okay, it was his son, not his brother.
Right.
So let me ask you, Mark, so that we can bring the story up. So you went through a trial.
Yes,
ma'am. You were found guilty of arson and murder. You received a sentence of 4 natural life terms.
Yes, ma'am.
And you spent 28 years in prison.
Yes, ma'am.
When you were first remanded to prison after trial, tell us about your appeals and tell us about where they sent you. They sent you to an adult prison.
Yes. I was sent from the Cook County Jail to a classification prison, which was Joliet Prison, and I was sent there for 2 weeks, and then I was sent to a prison which is considered to be one of the worst, and that was Pontiac Prison. Well, a African-American administrator, she recognized and said, no. Say, we can't have this young, small child roaming around up in this prison. He would be victimized. So what they've done, they moved me from Pontiac Prison and sent me back to Joliet Prison, where I remained at Joliet Prison until 1986, until I went on a food strike and dealing with a young lady that had been sent to death row at
death
the
row.
Age of
that was Paula Young.
Paula
Cooper. Booper, I'm sorry.
Right, and when Paula Cooper received this, I was outraged that she had received this because she was not even 18 years old, and the law in Indiana required that she be 18, and the comments what the judge stated, he should have been disbarred immediately. But
exactly.
He was never disbarred. He stated that he could not see himself giving a black girl, 15 years old, any lesser sentence than death for killing a white woman. And
yes.
Paula Cooper sat on death row in Indiana before the Pope got involved. When the Pope got involved, it was almost immediately corrected when he got involved, because he went to the Reagan administration, which was in play then, and the Supreme Court immediately heard the case and reversed it. But
at the time that Paula Young was sentenced to death, how many years had you been in prison?
I had been in prison from 82. 86, so 4 years at that point.
Okay.
Yes.
And at that point, you were 20 years old.
Yes.
And
go
ahead. I wanted to know what about that really prompted you toward both your food strike and toward your determination to become an inside activist.
Well, what really prompted me was this was a child. And looking at my own situation as being a child, I felt that children were unfairly represented by the legal system. This young child was raped 2 times while in custody by guards. The judge stated he felt that she had consensual sex to try to escape her punishment. The guards were never fired. That outraged me to the fact that me being a young child, if I didn't stand up, then who would? At Joliet Prison, we started a program which was called the Juvenile Justice. It was called the Juvenile Justice Movement. And that was under the borough library system. And what we did was we tried to protect the interests and rights of juvenile offenders. And what I would see, it would just anger me because basically juveniles are told to just go in the courtroom, shut up, don't say anything, just sit there, look at the judge, say yes, sir, no, sir. And that angered me. I did that, and that didn't do anything for me but send me to prison with 4 naturalized sentences for a crime that I did not even commit. And that is why I got involved with Paula Cooper's situation. The prison, the prison conditions were inhumane at Joliet Prison, where you had mice, roaches, just commonly roaming around the kitchen area. Well, I confronted that issue. We got our first African-American police superintendent in Fred Rice, who, and our first black mayor in Harold Washington, who I really felt would try to change what had occurred to me. So I really was fighting real hard to try to draw attention to my situation. I did, but they didn't care. And that is another aspect which most people don't understand. When you're trapped in the belly of the beast, and you ask your own leaders to help you, they ignore you. So things such as prison conditions and maybe injustices, what I did do was I became a member of the National Alliance Against Racist and Political Repression, which is today Chicago Alliance Against Racism and Political Repression, that organization founded by Angela Davis. So Angela would occasionally write me herself and tell me, well, you know, be strong and, you know, we're fighting for you and, you know, things are going to change. She was a professor in California. And I just grew and grew and grew as far as my education. I got a Pearl Legal License. I began to study the law more and more and understand my rights. And what I basically did was I fought the best way that I could from behind prison walls when it really... I'm listening.
Go ahead.
When it really got too hard on me, then I would draw to outside supporters, you know, to kind of like... to make sure that I was not abused by the guards.
Yeah. That's always a good defense. Mark, tell our audience how you eventually came to be free from prison, to be released.
Well, it was an opportunity that most inmates don't get. Bernadine Dorn, who is the wife of William Ayers, she came to visit me because she was studying juveniles that were sentenced to prison and that perhaps will never get out of prison. And I talked to Bernadine, and I explained to her my situation. Bernadine was so convinced that she went to one, as well as not one, it is the largest. It's Skadden Arts, and they are a corporate law firm. The corporate law firm did have attorneys that studied criminal law. The attorneys were so outraged that they took this case pro bono. I was able to have now 8 different attorneys working on my behalf. Well, they told me, say, Mark, we have contacted Morton Smith. Morton Smith is a top investigator in wrongful convictions. And they said that Morton is sick right now. So we're going to contact another investigator, and the investigation will probably take 6 months. Well, I said, okay. Well, I receive a phone call in a week from the attorneys, and they said, Mark, said our investigation is over with. And they said, would you like to know the results? And I told them yes. They say, well, we have impounded 2 bottles that the police claim that you touched, and we are sending that down to the crime lab now to be tested by DNA. Say, but our investigation is over with, and what our investigation revealed is overwhelmingly you innocent. They said that soon as they went into the community and began to ask people about this fire, they were approached by many people, and they all said that young boy didn't commit that crime. They said, the reason we know, we've been living over here for years, and we've seen who committed that crime. They named some street names, Big Wheel Kill and somebody by the name of White Folks. And say they killed the owner of that apartment, of that apartment building. They killed his dogs, and they tried to throw his son into the trunk of a car, but they was unsuccessful. Said they came back one late night. Say it was warm outside, so we was out here sitting on the porch. And when they came back, say they began to throw bottles into the hallway. Say Ruthus had just walked into the building. And say the building went up immediately. And say that's who committed that crime. And said that small kids wasn't even allowed even in the building, which is true. And they said these small kids wasn't allowed in the building because this was a building where that big drugs were sold out of. And not only big drugs, but there was prostitution in this pool room where, you know, the Scott family owned. And they told him and said the Scott family was one of the largest drugs, you know, they sold drugs. And say they sold so many drugs out of that store. Well, they took this to the state's attorney's office, and the state's attorney was like, well, we need time to investigate. Well, they went back to the judge and asked the judge, could they file a motion for a special prosecutor? The judge gave them the consent to do so, and they filed it for the Chief Judge Paul Beeble back in April of 2009. The special prosecutor, Stuart Neudeman, was appointed. Stuart Neudeman had this case from mid-April until August, when the case was dropped and I went home. And I didn't even believe it.
Yeah. I imagine that it was.
It went so fast. I'm looking at all of these other torture victims that went through the same route that I went through. And it took them years to get out, even once they got good attorneys. And I was never allowed to go to court. But my moms would tell me and say, they bullies. They bullies in the courtroom. That's what we need. And that is what I needed. I needed some people to believe in me. And it was not the African-American community, sad to say, because I wrote enough letters, perhaps to stretch from my prison cell to Jesse Jackson's front door of his home. He never wrote me back. That hurt me.
Yeah. Mark, we're going to have to take a break, but when we come back, we want to talk about the connection to Borg and his consequential indictment for I think it's so key that number one, you've pointed out that there were a number, more than over 100, it's estimated, men, African American men, who had been tortured and terrorized and making false confession, and that Berg, the lieutenant at the Chicago Police Department, was commandering the torture and confession and terrorizing of persons that were arrested, and that we may be dealing with a situation where there are many who have to go through the same process that you did in order to clear themselves because they confessed to crimes that they did not commit. You're listening to Our Common Ground. This is with Alpho and Janice Graham. Thank you so much for being with us tonight. We'll be right back with our guest, Mark Clement. This is Our Common Ground. I'm Janice Graham, and I'll be listening for you. Talk that matters. Speaking truth to power and ourselves. This is Janice Graham inviting you to join us at Our Common Ground, Saturdays, 10 p.m., Blog Talk Radio. I'll be listening for you.
Here we go.
We are family. We are.
Soul Talk at TruthWorks Network with Dr. Deborah Napier. A heart for my people with relationships, family, social service, social needs, psychology, thinking, restructuring. A heart for my people. Coming soon on TruthWorks Network. Talk for the soul and talk to the soul.
And we certainly do hope that you'll join us at TruthWorks Network on Tuesday, February 1st at 8 p.m. with A Heart for My People with Dr. Deborah Napier. And then on Thursday, Fearless Mother with Denise Bowles.
I sat in a prison cell and I prayed for this day.
You're listening to Our Common Ground. I'm Janice Grant.
Chicago Police Lieutenant John Burge is found guilty of lying about the torture of suspects. For decades, dozens of suspects, most of them black, have accused Burge and his officers of torturing them into confessing to crimes ranging from armed robbery to murder. Burge now faces up to 45 years in prison when he's sentenced.
ABC 7's Leah Hope has been following the trial since it began, and she joins us now with more on the verdict. A lot of raw emotion out there today, Leah.
Indeed. Cheryl and Kathy, a special prosecutor, found Burge and his officers got confessions through torture. But the incidents happened too long ago for Burge to be charged. However, federal prosecutors found in 2003, Burge answered two sworn court documents that he never tortured suspects or knew about such acts. Now, those sworn statements were within reach of prosecutors. John Burge was seen arriving for court today, but once the verdict was read, he was taken out of the Dirksen Federal Building, away from public view. The former Chicago police commander is convicted for lying about torturing suspects in the 70s and 80s.
I'm not going to say it's a perfect measure of justice. It's a measure of justice. It's sad it took so long, but it would be horrible if it never would.
Burge denied shocking, suffocating, burning, and beating suspects into false confessions when he testified in his own defense, but the jury didn't buy it.
He was disappointed, but he's a tough man. He knows the fight is not over.
Tonight, jurors spoke about the lies and actions that led to their verdict.
We all would have liked to have rendered a different verdict. It would have been nice if these sorts of things never actually occurred. But the fact of the matter is they did.
How could you hurt somebody and, you know, you shouldn't torture people like that. And just, it was shocking to hear what they did.
While the jury only heard about five cases of Burge torturing suspects, dozens of other men also contend Burge abused them. Mark Clemens spent nearly 30 years in jail for murders he did not commit. Clemens says he was just a teenager when Burge coerced his confession.
Today is a victory for every poor person. I was 16 years old.
An impromptu rally erupted outside of the federal building after the verdict was read.
The people of Chicago are speaking. They have spoken. They say they believe what we've been saying for many years.
A measure of justice has been rendered today.
And tonight, we thank you for being here with us at Our Common Ground. Our guest, Mark Clemens, so courageous, so brave, and so full of passion. Mark, what was your take on how this happened, how Burge was targeted around, I mean, when you were tortured, you never saw Berg.
I never saw John Burge at all. John Burge was the commander, the individual whom the state's attorney most likely consulted with that drew John McCann back to the interrogation room, and he accused me of getting him in trouble with his boss, or trying to get him in trouble with his boss.
So when McCann said that, he was talking about John Burge.
That's who he was speaking of, correct. But no, I tell people this all the time. I thank God I never seen John Burge, meaning I never had the interaction with John Burge, or I will probably had been killed.
Let's listen some more about what has happened with Burge in regard to this sentencing.
The People's Law Office has represented more than 20 men who allege abuse by Burge. The office's principal attorney, Flint Taylor, hopes that this verdict will help those still incarcerated get new hearings and those wrongfully convicted can be compensated. Judge Joan Lefkoe will sentence Burge on November 5th.
Okay, Leah, thank you.
All along, John Burge denied shocking, suffocating, burning, and beating suspects into false confessions when he testified in his own defense. In the end, the jury didn't buy it.
Attorneys for John Burge go back to court this morning to ask that the former Chicago police commander remain free on bond.
A jury found Burge guilty of lying about torture. ABC 7's Michelle Gallardo joins us now live from the Dirksen Federal Building with more on what is next. Michelle?
Judy, Jose, good morning. Well, there is a bond hearing scheduled for 9 o'clock this morning. It is not clear whether Burge himself will be here, but his attorneys are expected to ask the judge to allow Burge to remain free on bond until his November 5th sentencing. If he receives the maximum penalty allowed, Burge faces up to 45 years in prison. However, it is expected that his actual sentence will be much lower than that. In fact, his attorneys have said that they will seek probation for the 62-year-old Burge, who is also said to have prostate cancer. Live at the Dirksen Federal Building, I'm Michelle Gallardo, ABC 7 News. Judy and Jose, back to you.
All right, Michelle, thank you.
Mark, give us a summary of what is happening with Burge now. He's been convicted of charges that are unrelated, that are not directed toward the torture and terror which he commanded. And what the U.S. Attorney did was to charge him for obstruction of justice and for perjury. And that is what he was found guilty of. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct. And let me touch on this for you. First of all, I totally disagree with how the sentencing structure was handled by the U.S. District Attorney. And it takes a lot and love and compassion for me to say this, but I do believe that Mr. John Burge should not have been sentenced to 4.5 years. I do not believe that he should have been sentenced to 45 years. But John Burge should have been sentenced to a sentence of at least 10 years in prison. John Burge was shown
the most.
And so now,
he's trying to get off with probation?
Well, no. Due to the fact that it has now, it's too late for that. John Burge on March the 16th will have to report to either a hospital or to a federal prison in Florida on that date. So it is already set that he has the 4.5-year sentence.
Now, Alpha, my co-host, has some questions for you before we start taking calls.
Yes.
Brother Clemens, I've sat here and I've listened to your story, and I've been here in Chicago all my life.
Yes.
I'm a bit older than you.
Yes.
And I am not surprised, nor am I astonished, simply for the fact that, you know, I wasn't involved and it didn't happen to me. And I understand your passion. I understand. I mean, how can you not be bitter at this stage of your life when this injustice, this is classic. And this goes on throughout the entire country. What seems to be a pattern, a consensus that I hear somebody say something about he has prostate cancer?
Yes.
That's
yes.
to get him into the hospital rather than into the prison. I am tired. I am weary. I am so sick of the disparaging treatment given to convicted felons who have betrayed the trust of the people and betrayed the trust of their oath over and over again. This is not just John Burge. And if John Burge is going to jail, you say he shouldn't get 45 years. I say he should have gotten longer than 45 years. I believe that through their obstruction of justice, the statute of limitations was manipulated and allowed to run out on these crimes. Let me put it like this. These are crimes that are parallel and equivalent to that of first-degree murder or murder for hire. This is the theft of your life. And at some point in time, there is no compensation whatsoever that the state of Illinois or, you know, anyone can give you that will, you know, that will make this right. Nothing will ever make this right. And that is why whatever has ever happened to all of these other policemen who have participated in this torture and participated in the cover-up, along with the ilks of a Richard Daley. Yeah, and just because there were people of color who were involved in these decisions, then somehow that is supposed to remove the power of this white supremacy that we have faced in this nation for centuries. This is not just an abomination to Americans. This should be, you know, this should be an offense to all Americans, because this is what has, the state's attorney is in cahoots with this. Not just the state's attorney, the assistant state's attorney who came to visit you, you know, while you were being held. He was in cahoots with this. This is, you know, as you know, you've lived here in Chicago, but not as long as I have. And the man's name is Lou Palmer, and he's infamous for this could make a Negro turn black. And this is, you know, from what I'm hearing firsthand, because like I said, I've lived here. I've, you know, this is something that, you know, I've lived and known for decades. And
isn't Lou Palmer black?
Lou Palmer is. Well, he was black. Lou Palmer is passed.
Oh, okay.
Lou Palmer had a Lou Palmer had a show, and he had not a show. He made a commentary on Black Talk Radio here in Chicago, and that's how he ended every one of his commentaries, because the majority of him of the commentaries were about the disparaged treatment of black people in this city. And he used to end commentary with, "It's enough to make a Negro turn black." This is Lou Palmer.
Well,
and Brother Clement,
one of the things, there's still, Alpha and Mark, you can comment on this, and for those of you who would like to join in the conversation, our number is 347-838-9852. Now is the issue of whether or not this prostate cancer thing is going to work. Because this judge is absolutely livid. She is absolutely livid with the U.S. Attorney's Office as well as the State Attorney's Office. And anything that they do that is a wrong turn, she's going to be on them. She has a microscope over this case. But the other issue is that Berg is going to receive his $3,000 a month pension from the city of Chicago. Well, the other issue that we need to talk about is where the hell are the people who actually carried out the torture and the terrorism on these prisoners?
Well, that's another question I would have.
Right, and yeah. I want to answer that question. Those detectives, I would say about 99% of them have retired. There are a small percentage of them that are still lingering at various police districts today that are still this day carrying out tortures. And to listen to the judge state that the U.S. District Attorney, with him being in the courtroom, meaning Patrick Fitzgerald, she told him that his office failed all of these men that were tortured, and to count that is known to us, under Burge alone, there are over 200 individuals that were beaten, tortured. Despite the
Is she going to hold accountable the police officers and the detectives?
No, because that is the only case that was brought to her under indictment was John Burge. The other officers, it could have been 8 more indictments out of this ring. It was not, because the U.S. District Attorney, Patrick Fitzgerald, on last Friday, during the news conference, once Burge was sentenced, and I called his sentence outrageous, I asked him, before all of the media, I said, Mr. Fitzgerald, now that we have Mr. John Burge going to prison, who and when will the next indictments be announced? This man turned around and looked at me with the coldest, evilest eye that I've ever witnessed anyone in my entire life look at me. And he stated out of his mouth, this is what I'm just putting in here, if this makes common sense to you, then tell me I'm wrong. But this is what he said. He said that the investigations will continue, but indictments was unlikely. Now, if that makes any common sense, then tell me, what is the need to have an investigation if there's not going to be any indictments? Oh. Then, what I take as a real smack in the face coming from this man is the fact that I listened to Mr. Flint Teller, I listened to other people, and everyone praised this sentence as being a victory. And people tried to make it appear as if I was some crazy lunatic just going off before the media. And I told them, John Burke has a pension hearing coming up. And guess what? When that pension hearing come up, tell me if I'm a lunatic, because he may keep his pension, because that's what they stated last Friday. Oh, well, we are going to get John Burge's pension. I'm looking at it that there's mothers suffering because their children are still in prison. There's daughters and sons that ain't even seen their fathers for at least 2 decades. And you sitting up here talking about a pension? That's what I looked at that as. Yes, we wanted his pension. Don't get me wrong. But it's bigger than that. Men suffered. Their families suffered. Now, when John Burge's pension hearing came up, and me and my groups were the first ones to go down to the Chicago Police Pension Board back in July. And we signed up to testify. And they were supposed to notify us of this hearing. They notified no one. Thursday, I was woke up by the media saying, Mr. Clemens, we're calling you because we want to comment. John Burge will keep his pension. Did you know that the board today ruled with a 5-4 vote for John Burge to keep his pension? Almost fell down to the basement of my house because I was so mad. You mean to tell me that we have leaders and everyone missed the boat here?
And so no, Brother Clemens, it wasn't a matter of them missing the boat. It was a matter of them ignoring the boat.
And I will agree with you. I agree, because I know how Chicago-style political underhand works as well. But this morning, because I immediately consulted with attorneys, and this morning I went down and I had a meeting with Jesse Jackson. And Jesse has agreed that on Monday morning we will be suing John Burge for his pension. We will be suing the Chicago Police Pension Board for a violation of the Open Meetings Act, because no one was contacted by them to testify. And I met with the president of the Chicago Police Pension Board. And I take this as a personal attack among myself and among the 23 men who couldn't attend. And I have every intention to fight this man to make sure that his pensions is given to these homeless torture men that are living out in the middle of the streets. Today, me and Jesse called a press conference, and we let it be known that Monday morning we will be suing the Chicago Police Pension Board. I don't have
Mark and Alpha, we have some callers, and we need to try to get to those. But I think that's the first step. The other step is I would love to see the justice and human rights organizations in Chicago demand of every damn candidate for mayor to organize a truth and conciliation board panel commission to hear the testimony of the men that have brought these charges and have been exonerated, because of torture and terrorism in the Chicago Police Department. Let's go to our phones.
They did that much already, and they refuse to do it. I'm just letting you know. Beat you to that part.
Okay.
Back in
all you people out there who are live in Chicago, live in Illinois, and all of you people, you know, one of the things that I've been posting the link to more information about this situation, jailjohnburge.org, as well as the Chicago Alliance Against Racist and Political Repression, which is www.naarpr.org. That's naarpr.org. And you can touch bases at Our Common Ground Facebook, join Mark Clemens on Facebook, as well as Black Talk Radio Network at Facebook. Let's go to our phone. 616, you're on the air. I respect you. Thank you for your call.
Well, thank you very much. I listen to your show. I have complete opposite political views. But, sir, I want to apologize as a resident of Chicago, as a individual, regardless of whatever. We, the people, have failed the people. We've let this machine go on for so long and just turned our back because it hasn't happened in our own living rooms. We can go on and on forever about this political thing, that political thing, white flag issue. We have failed you, sir, and I want to apologize on behalf of just the people who continue to turn their back on just these travesties that continue to happen. One of the reasons I think that attorney said that to you is because they really don't want to uncover just how mammoth this really is, and just for so long how it's gone on. And you are just one of countless who have suffered. But as far as for me, sir, I want to just apologize on my behalf, because we the people are really responsible for all of this. And just your humbleness and your Mr. Jesus type approach, I have tears coming down my eyes, my friend. I mean, I could never be as you are acting today. And again, I want to apologize. I'm going to hang up and let the other callers listen. And
well, thank you so much for your call. I do think that is important for, under the guise of public policy, under the guise of public law enforcement, under the guise of a judiciary system that goes wrong, that as American citizens, we do need to apologize to victims. That is so important. Because these people's lives have been ripped apart. There is nothing that we can do to take it back. This man lost 28 years of his life, and he used them well. But despite that, 28 years of freedom, 28 years of denied justice, it's appalling in America.
You are right. And just to Judge Lifkow, and this is what they constantly do. She has been challenged to recuse herself because of some specious application that this defense attorney and the John Burgess attorneys want to make upon her, because they see that she is not playing ball, as so many judges in this municipality will do and have done. So she's been challenged because of some conflict of interest that's null. And this is what they do. Go ahead, Brother Clemens.
Hey, I just wanted to say to the last caller, thank you. No apology is really needed, because I think he hit it on the head, and he said Christian approach. I am a Christian. And let me tell you, what these detectives have in store is great than what we can ever amount against them. They will have their day of justice. sad to say, it may not come when we want it, but it will come. John Burge has cancer today. So that's one thing that we all must understand. When God attacks, he does it in a whole total different way.
Well, Mark, one of the things, too, and Alpha mentioned it earlier, is that, you know, we have these elected officials, these appointed officials, who are nodding and winking. Shame on Patrick Fitzgerald that he can spend months and months running behind ghosts about a governor, but he didn't spend the time to do the appropriate investigation for which he has under his authority. He has the authority to open an investigation based on the findings of the investigation in the Burge case. He does have that. Mark, how can people get involved in supporting your efforts? And you look pretty good there marching on that line the other day. You were in charge, my brother.
Well, let me tell you one thing, and I must say this. I visioned this from my prison cell, and I prayed honestly for this day. I prayed that I would be alive when John Burge was taken down. And I prayed that I be the one that was spearheading to take him down. God bless me and put me over an organization. And I thank God for coming in and coming in with the right people. We still need people to get involved. And how they can get involved, they can contact me personally. I don't make myself as a stranger. I'm not hiding. If someone wants to shoot me, then do it. Because I believe... No.
What is your email address?
My email address, Mark at no... deathpenalty.org. Once again, Mark at nodeathpenalty.org. And I will be happy to sit down with you. You can attend the meetings. And we are right now mobilizing what I would like to be one of the largest events in Chicago's history, if we can pull this off, for March the 16th at 26 in California, and this march is against every top prosecutor who played a role with these tortures. I am asking that these prosecutors come together and work out a fair solution which the people can agree upon to release these 23 men. And what I have come up with and my organizations is that at least give these men a hearing on their claims of torture. So far, the system has fought them. I have tried to get meetings with Anita Alvarez, which has went rejected. I have talked with some of her top aides, but not her. I have tried to secure meetings with Stuart Neudeman to no prevail. We have tried to secure meetings with Patrick Fitzgerald to no prevail.
Well, Mark, we certainly wish you well, and you certainly can count on us, our microphones, are always available to you, to the organizations that support the efforts that you are trying to, the efforts of change that you are trying to this situation. We should all be appalled by this, and I hope that by sharing this microphone with you that we have been helpful in it.
You have. You certainly have.
You know, and any time that you need this microphone, you have my email address and you have my telephone number. So we are certainly, you are certainly welcome here. We would like to hear more about your March 16th event. And, you know, one of the things that strikes me about your story, Mark, is something that I tell my audience all the time. Children that are in foster care, children that are in orphanages, or children's centers as they call them now, and prisoners, they live, their spirits live by us reaching out to them where they are. And it's so important to adopt a prisoner. If nothing more than you drop a card in the mail to them once a month. Because one of the reasons you all know, in who have been listening to this show over the years, I very rarely get involved in kicking people out of chat rooms and talking ugly to people who come into the chat room. I very rarely do that. But we have got to understand this is serious business. This man's 28 years cannot be restored. No matter what he does, if they take John Berg and every detective that touched him when he was 16 years old, or for every ugly thing that happened to him in prison, and they take them all out in the backyard and shoot them, their lives, that part of their lives, can never be restored. There are injuries that we incur in life that can never be healed. So, you know, I don't want people to walk away from these broadcasts and say, wow, that was a great story and he's a wonderful person. Do something for him. Get an address of all you have to do is get involved in an organization like the Chicago Alliance Against Racism and Political Repression. They'll give you a prisoner, an address of a prisoner that you can write to. There are pen pals. You know, we have got to do more than we do. This is why. This is why these people persist. Really interesting that most of the victims were what? Black and Latino.
Yes.
We better get real, because it's not going to happen listening to Our Common Ground. Our Common Ground is a place where you come, where we sort through, where we share and exchange, where we can empower ourselves. But when you move from here, you have to move from here and do something. Mark Clemens, thank you so very much. Alpha, I don't know if you have some comments you want to make to Mark before he leaves us. I want to thank everyone, Black Talk Radio Network, that connected me up with Mark, Scotty Reed. And Scotty, I got to tell you, that new grandbaby of yours, that's a beautiful baby. And Don and House Music Lover and Stephen C. and YJ, who have joined us tonight, these are some perilous times for black people. We are either being victimized or we are being made invisible. And I still ask the question every week, Mark,
yes.
Does it still matter to be black in America?
Oh, that's a hard question. Very hard.
Mark? Alpha?
Well, Mark is, I can't say that what has happened in your life is in any way, you know, your fault. You were simply in the way and in the wrong place at the wrong time, if I could use that cliche. But this is a deeper problem. This is a bigger issue. And as Mark well understands, that this is about now. This is about damage control. This is about damage control and stopping the exposure of what the system is for a black man and African Americans in this country. And they will protect that perception at any cost.
You're right.
Yeah. Mark, thank you so much, and let's stay in touch. Call on me if I can be of any help. I do have friends in Chicago. If not that I really want to do it, but sometimes a woman got to do what a woman got to do. If I can make some calls to Reverend Jackson, I was his Massachusetts chair in his first run for president. So I do feel I can make the call. But we hope that you will come back before the March 16th event and talk to us a bit more. And thanks again to Scotty Reed at Black Talk Radio.
Janice, in closing
yes.
here, I thank you for this opportunity. I thank Scotty. Scotty has had the door open for me, and I just thank everyone. But what I would like to say is that on this Tuesday, I will be testifying before the Cook County Board, and that is located in Chicago, downtown, in the same building where City Hall is located. I ask for everyone that has an interest in trying to correct Chicago police tortures to please come out, because there are homeless torture victims today living on the street who badly need shelter. There are some that are suffering from psychological effects behind the tortures. There are men that need compensation as a result of the tortures, and there are men that desperately need to be freed from prison. So I thank you for this opportunity.
I thank you, too, and I just want to say one more time to you, thank you for making the choice that you have made. You're listening to Our Common Ground at Blog Talk Radio. We have just had a visit here at Our Common Ground with Mark Clemens, and it is very sobering. We'll be right back.
I sat in a prison cell, and I prayed for this day.
You're listening to Our Common Ground. I'm Janice Grant. Hotep, Abari Ghani. I'm Janice Graham, executive producer of TruthWorks Network, inviting you to join us in our newest adventure,
live call-in talk radio. We begin our journey on Tuesdays, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, A Heart for My People, Relationship Talk, Family Talk, Community Talk with Dr. Deborah Napier. On Thursday, Fearless Mother with Denise Bowles, talking about parenting, parenting strategies, and the collective parenting responsibilities. On Friday, join me with conversations from deep waters, intimate discussions, and interviews with the best thinkers and authors in our community, activists, idea people, solutions people, and organizers. And on Saturday, it's Just Damn Radio. At 3 p.m., The Alpha Show coming to TruthWorks Network permanently, 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It's TruthWorks Network, the Black Collaborative Voice, bringing you the Black Truth of the event. I'm Janice Graham. We certainly hope that you will join us. You're going to love the way we talk. TruthWorks Network. Thank our chatters and our caller tonight from Chicago. Alpha, you know, sometimes I really do get to the point where I understand where you just say, just damn.
Well, Janice, let me put it like this. You know, people speak about they're Christians. And this is not an affront or an attack on Christianity. Turning the other cheek, there's something to be said. But if you continue to turn the other cheek, you'll come up dead. You can only allow yourself to be abused, to be dealt with less than human care. There are people who are insidiously, nefariously positioned and intentionally wreaking this type of havoc throughout our culture, throughout our community. This is not something that is incidental. This is by design. This is on purpose. This is what they do. Now, this is not about any type of black nationalist movement that I want to oppose anything white. It is just the opposite. It is far from it. I oppose injustice. I oppose disparaged treatment. I oppose inequality. If this is going to be the great nation that we honor, that it wants to be viewed upon, if you can't see what is going on and it's shouting in your face, just as we've had a couple of detractors who want to say that, oh, this is a white bashing room, chat room, and with all of the BS. And those are the types of people who I simply can't stomach because they simply are not either in tune, and one of the persons was of Asian descent, which just allows me and lets me know that there's no way that they could ever relate to the history of this nation, to the present of this nation, let alone the future of this nation, and what race relations are in this country and what they mean.
I tell you. Well, I want to go to our before we leave tonight, we've only got about 10 minutes, and I want to go to our empowerment moment, and then when we come back, we can talk about some of the things that we need to be doing.
Our children can't hear the truth at school if a person says fuck. Can't even talk about fuck even though a third of their senior class is pregnant. I can't teach an 18-year-old girl in a public school how to use a condom that will save her life and that of the orphan she'll be forced to give to the foster care system. Carlos, how many 13-year-olds do you know that are HIV positive? Honestly, none. But I do visit a shelter every Monday and talk with six 12-year-old girls with diagnosed AIDS, while fourth graders three blocks away give little boys blowjobs during recess. I'm an 11-year-old gang member in the South Bronx who carries a semi-automatic weapon to study hall so we can make it home. And you want me to censor my language, Carlos? What's genocide? You wonder why children hide in adult bodies, lie under light-color-eyed contact lenses, learn to fetishize the size of their ass, and simultaneously hate their lips. My students thought Che Guevara was a rapper from East Harlem. Still think my Mumia t-shirt is of Bob Marley. How can literacy not include Phyllis Wheatley? Schools were built in the shadows of ghosts, filtered through incest and grinding teeth, molded under veils of extravagant ritual. Carlos was genocide. Rosalyn, how old was she? ¿Cuántos años tuvo tu madre cuando se murió? My mother had 32 years when she died. Ella era bellissima. What's genocide? They've moved on from sterilizing Boricua women, injecting indigenous sisters with hepatitis B. Now they just kill mothers with silent poison, stain their loyalty and love in their veins, and suffocate them. What's genocide? Reed one's father hung himself in the box because he thought his son was ashamed of him. What's genocide? Maureen's mother gave her skin lightening cream the day before she started the sixth grade. What's genocide? She carved straight lines into her beautiful brown thigh so she can remember what it feels like to heal. What's genocide? What's genocide? Carlos, what's genocide, Luz? This right here is genocide.
Alpha, I think that one of the things we've got to decide is what is justice and what is genocide. One, we don't have, and the other, it's all around us, and we are saying nothing. We are doing nothing. We are worried about how much our paycheck is going to be so that we can live, have a roof over our miserable, oppressed lives.
Stunning.
I am
everyone.
So fucking mad tonight. Don sent me a package, a can of his madness.
Well, everyone has that self-survival mode of, but for my job, there go I. But for my ability to support myself, there go I. So we all will cop to, I'm trying to survive. But
well, the thing is, we're not, Alpha, my point is this. My point is that we are living to simply exist rather than living to live. Subsist rather than exist. Because we are not fighting the system, Alpha. We think that somehow somebody else is going to do it for us. Well, somebody did, and then they stopped, and look at what we got.
Someone did, then they stopped, and no one is going to pick up that baton at this point because it is simply about their self-survival. No one is willing to sacrifice themselves, as our history has shown, and our history has shown us that the people who are willing to sacrifice themselves, to essentially martyr themselves, have turned into just great speaks of history. And only a very few of us are left who appreciate what they have done and what they have meant for us. Janice, I know we've got about only a few minutes left, so I'll
end. We've got 2 minutes left. You're going to have to hold this up for a minute because, you know, I said last night, I have spent my entire life on issues of injustice. Since I learned to write because I was copying stuff for my parents because they had to make a lot of copies of whatever they were writing about for it was the NAACP at the time and SLCL. And it doesn't seem to be getting any better. People in Chicago should be in the street. Look at what's happening in Egypt. 100 people have died in the last 5 days because they understand that justice and freedom cannot be held up by an artificial democracy. Tens of thousands of people are storming Cairo streets in defiance of a government that did not speak for them. They're calling it what it is, and we don't seem to get it. Afia is in the chat room from, she's a member of the U.S. Human Rights Network. How many people who are listening to this broadcast who think that justice and freedom are important are members of the U.S. Human Rights Commission who's working on behalf of political prisoners and the systemic injustice of this democracy? We can't continue just to talk. Okay. I really do thank our caller tonight, and I especially thank Mark Clemens, our guest, and wish him well and thank him for his strength and courage and character to address injustice, even at the position where he started in prison. Can we start at our kitchen table? Alpha, thank you again for co-hosting with me. We will be right back here next Saturday night at 10 p.m. at Our Common Ground. Don't forget, TruthWorks begins its full week, its first week of live programming. And we hope you'll join us. Been listening to Our Common Ground at Blog Talk Radio. Thank you for being with us. Thank you for your calls and your participation in our chat room. We want to especially thank Mark Clemens for being our guest tonight and wish him well. If you'd like to know more about Mark and his activism and the case of John Berg, please visit jailberg.com. Please join us at TruthWorks Network
for nightly live call-in talk radio. This has been another program of Our Common Ground, speaking truth to power and ourselves. Join us next Saturday night, 10 p.m. I'll be listening for you.